I'm sat with Peter Naish. Can you tell me your job title, sir?
Yes, I'm a senior lecturer in cognitive psychology.
Cognitive psychology, which I imagine encompasses hypnosis.
It does, it does. Funny you should mention that. It's exactly what I research.
So what does it involve, the research of hypnosis, and how did you come about doing this?
Okay, well, how I came about it, I guess, years and years ago, as a teenager, I read a book about it, like you do, found one, it all sounded very exciting. And so I tried it on a friend, and by chance, he was hypnotically susceptible, so it worked. And I was sort of hooked, not big time, but it intrigued me. And I've often thought that if the first person I tried it on hadn't been susceptible, because we vary, some of us are, some are not, I probably would have just thought, well, this is a load of rubbish, isn't it? And thought no more about it. So years later, when I did a psychology degree, some people were setting up a British Society for Hypnosis and contacting psychologists and saying, anyone interested? And of course I was.
Wow, so what makes a person susceptible? What did that person need to have had for you not to have embarked on this path?
Yeah, well, we almost have to go and start with other questions for that, because it's a very deep issue, what makes a person responsive. The answer would have differed depending whom you asked and at what stage in history.
Interesting how I say susceptible and you say responsive. That use of dictionary, I imagine, is very, very important.
Yes.
You used a positive term, whereas I guess use a negative term.
Well, some people would translate it as negative. Mm. I mean, there are scales to test people. If you're just doing hypnotherapy, well, you take someone how they are. But if you're doing research, because you're going to write about it, and other researchers on the other side of the world might want to compare their results with yours, they need to know how susceptible the person is. Mm. And so there are series of tests that you give. Some people might pass 12 out of 12, and most of us somewhere around the middle, and a few, not many at all, if any. And those are always called susceptibility tests. So it's a perfectly good word and shouldn't have negative connotations, but I know what you mean. It sounds as if, in some sense, you're a bit weak and you're susceptible.
Yeah.
And people often assume that, oh, if I be hypnotised, it proves I'm weak-willed.
Loads
of nonsense.
No, not at all.
It probably, I'm thinking nowadays, implies that they have a versatile brain.
Ah.
I think people who can respond really well in hypnosis, they can make their brain perform feats that the rest of us, and I'm one who's not very responsive, we can't do it.
Hmm. Interesting. So you can't, I mean, have you tried hypnotising yourself? Do you manage now?
Yes. I mean, I go to conferences on hypnosis, and sometimes there are sessions when there's a group session or one-to-one, that kind of thing, demonstrating some point. But you probably want me to go back and talk about theories and try to explain why some are and some are not. And perhaps a good starting point is to say that while on the one hand some pretty impressive stuff can happen with hypnosis, when you get down to the finer detail, a lot of the time there's nothing very magical at all. And if you look at the susceptibility tests I mentioned, the test overall tends to contain, say, a dozen little sub-items that you do. You might, for example, suggest to someone that their arm is getting lighter and lighter and wants to float up. And for a susceptible person, up it starts to go. And obviously it's their own muscles doing it. But the thing is, they don't feel that they are. And so they look on in some surprise and say, ooh, it's weird, my arm seems it's moving by itself. But, of course, you've only got their word for it. And anyone could lift their arm up anyway. And that applies to all the tests. Anyone could do them anyway. We don't have a sort of litmus test where the only people who can possibly do it are those who are hypnotised.
Yeah.
There is no such test. So there was a period in history when people swung from being pretty gullible and assumed all sorts of wonderful things happened in hypnosis to the opposite extreme, and they tended to come at it from the perspective of social psychology, the way humans interact with each other. We, for example, tend, because we're a group living creature, like many of the other primates, we have a sort of pecking order. We know who's boss and who isn't. We don't like to offend and be awkward. The British are notorious at not complaining in restaurants and that sort of thing. We don't like to stand out as awkward. So if it's being researched in a university, so often it's a sort of professor figure doing the study and it's a student he's testing. And so you've got that kind of power differential there. And so it's entirely plausible that this student thinks, doesn't seem to be working for me. I don't know what's wrong with me. I expect it does for everyone else, because we all got a sort of idea of what hypnosis should be like. And so out of embarrassment, they act the part. And that's entirely possible. That may well happen sometimes. But it stretches credulity a bit. And if it's used therapeutically, then you have to say, well, why does a person not want to embarrass their doctor? If they haven't got better, they haven't got better. Can I please have a different pill?
That's a very good point.
So it does stretch credulity. Now, when it comes to the sort of medical angle, people said, well, it's probably a placebo effect. And indeed, it probably is in part. Many people assume that hypnosis is a bit magical. And if you go along and get therapy done, and it's supposed to be magical, well, then, of course, you're going to get some pretty impressive effects, even if nothing else is happening through the placebo. Sorry, you're about to ask something.
Yes. Some people find it, you said, you know, a lot of people think it's magical. Some people think it's almost too incredible when they look at the television, which is indeed where we... And they think, oh, this is not, he's making it up, it's not possible.
Yeah.
What do you say to these people that still don't believe that hypnosis is a real thing?
Well, I would say to them...
Apart from the fact you've based your whole life on it.
Yes, not quite the whole life, but I have done a lot of research in the area. I can assure them it's for real, and you can have people have teeth extracted with only hypnosis for the analgesic, no other kind of anaesthetic or anything.
I'm of the mind, undoubtedly, because I went away for a short space of time. You may mock the amount of time that I did go away to learn hypnosis and NLP. It was just an introduction into it. But when I came away, I was in absolutely no doubt at all that I could hypnotise somebody. Oh, and yes. I had been hypnotised myself. Yep. So, but for me, everything fell down when using this as a skill for stopping somebody smoking or curing someone's a phobia of sorts. I had very, very limited psychological, I didn't know about the psychology of these people. No. And it gets dangerous, doesn't it? I actually stopped because I had a couple of scary moments. I thought, I'm really not trained for this. No. It's quite a powerful tool.
It is a powerful tool, which again suggests that there's more to it than just a placebo, which of course there is. And you're right, there are courses out there that people can take, and within a very short space of time, they allegedly have a qualification. And anyone can hand out qualifications for anything, really. You pay your money, and there you are, you're whatever it is they've called you. And I sometimes get called as an expert witness in court cases that involve this sort of thing. And I was in one recently where someone had been age regressed, which is a dodgy process. Not least, it's dodgy because it assumes that you've got buried memories that you can't access, and that hypnosis can take you back and you can find these things. Now, that isn't true. The police, for example, have been advised by the Home Office not to use hypnosis with witnesses, with the idea that it will sort of help their memories to say what happened back at the scene. They're advised against it because it's unlikely to work. What it's very likely to do is to create a false memory. And in all innocence, this person thinks they're saying what they saw. And it's just an invention, an innocent invention.
Very dangerous.
Our brains work like that, yeah. And that was the case with a court case that I was recently at. This was a middle-aged man who had fairly recently been thrown out of work. I believe he turned to drink and got depressed. And so he went to see a hypnotherapist. And in no time at all, the therapist had taken him back in time. And over a number of sessions, this memory didn't come out instantly. In his evidence, the therapist said he helped the person to get his memory. Well, what he was doing was actually building a new memory that never was a memory. A terrible thing to do. And the memory concerned a neighbour. When the accuser was just a little boy, he said the man next door was abusing him. The man next door at this stage was an elderly chap, this poor old fellow in the dock, looking totally confused about the whole thing. And in court, it came out that the hypnotist had done, if you please, an online training thing.
Oh, no.
He was very carefully questioned, and it turned out that before he did this, he had no qualifications whatsoever. He was just a plasterer, had never done GCSEs or anything. And in the space of 3 months, which the judge interrupted and questioned, and it turned out, well, it was 3 months part-time study. He actually reckoned he perhaps had done a month of study. He allegedly could do almost anything psychological you care to mention. He was an analyst and an occupational psychologist.
NLP.
The lot. Anything that had psychologists in it, allegedly he could do it. And, well, to cut a long story short, the case was thrown out. The judge said, I'm not going to allow as admissible any evidence that's been obtained by this man.
Which is
absolutely right. Yeah. And as the prosecution didn't have any other evidence, that was the end of the case.
Wow. It's, incredibly dangerous when you think about it as a skill. Could you, not asking you to do this, obviously, is it possible for you to hypnotise any listeners to this recording, or do you need more than just audio? Do you need other non-verbal communication?
No, audio is fine. You have to want to, of course.
Sure.
If I started saying to people, you know, you're getting nice and relaxed, etc., they could easily say, no, I'm not. I wish to get relaxed, thank you very much, and nothing would happen. But sometimes once people know me and have met me, if it could be for exam nerves, for example, it's jolly good for that, nearer the time, if it's someone I've met and I know that they get in a real, real state, I'll say to them, well, when the exam's getting near, give me a ring and I'll chat you through these relaxation procedures.
Brilliant. You've got a voice for it. I must admit, you do have the voice for it.
Well, I always say I took up hypnosis because people go to sleep when I talk to them anyway. But let's get back to the story of the theory and everything. So it went through this sort of idea that perhaps people were almost cheating and it wasn't quite for real. But I think little by little, psychologists had to admit that not everyone was lying. They still couldn't quite bring themselves to say that the brain is actually doing very much. Mm. They said, well, you know, it is this social effect that we like to go along with things. And there's a kind of self-deception in it. You kid yourself that that's how it feels and you believe it. You really think, oh, yeah, I do feel different and so on. But they didn't make too much of it. But in recent times, things have begun to shift. For a start, we now have sophisticated brain imagery, so we can put people in scanners and hypnotise them. That doesn't instantly answer all the questions. For example, if you scan someone's brain when they're, with hypnotic suggestions, hallucinating something, it could be anything, seeing a cat, for example, or hearing some music that isn't playing, anything like that, their brain will show activity in exactly the right areas for having that experience. So they're not lying. However, you get very similar activity, perhaps not quite so convincing, but you do get very similar activity, for some people anyway, if you imagine very strongly those things and you're not hypnotised or anything like that. So the sceptics could still sort of wriggle out of it a little bit. Mm. But more and more scanning is showing some quite strange things are happening. I have a colleague who works in the pain area, and he scanned people with fibromyalgia, which is a nasty condition that produces lots of pain in joints and muscles and things. And he can actually, in a scanner, get them to make their pain get less, and sure enough, you can see all the associated brain regions decreasing their activity. Or they can, if they want to, make it go back up again. So you can wind it up and down.
Is this called creative visualization as well?
Yes. You might wonder how you visualise pain, but with his particular technique, he gets them to imagine a pain dial, a little knob that you turn up and down, and he'll say, try turning your pain all the way down to zero.
Because I do this for myself, but I give the pain a shape and I give it a colour. So a headache may, for example, be a green Toblerone across the front of my head. And by changing the shape and changing the colour, what I think is happening is I'm saying, yes, I know there's something wrong, I know I'm hurting, stop reminding me. And it really, really does work. And
suggestions are very powerful.
I can do it for other people, but I can't help but think maybe you should just take a tablet, or maybe you should go to the doctors rather than ignore the pain. But in some cases, well, it's unavoidable.
Yes, exactly. And obviously, anyone with some persistent pain would be silly not to consult a doctor, just in case. But if it is simply a headache or something else, it's a very good route, nicer than taking drugs.
Being a researcher of all of these different types of hypnosis, all of these different techniques, are there people out there right now that you think could benefit from hypnosis that wouldn't necessarily have thought about it, because this kind of thing is very easily solvable with hypnosis, should they be the type that can be hypnotized?
I guess I'd say almost whatever the problem, give it a thought. People tend to think of it for smoking, weight loss, those sorts of things. Pain, perhaps they might have heard that it's good for that. But even if you have the sort of thing where you might contemplate going to a counsellor of some kind, you've got some weighty issues in your life, things to weigh up, and it all seems to be going wrong and you don't know quite which way to turn. People can often use hypnosis as a useful vehicle to sort out those sorts of problems, depressions about past events, that kind of thing. You can restructure them and come to terms with them. But it's important, this is back to going to someone properly trained again, it's important that you're not just going to someone who's learned hypnosis, because hypnosis by itself doesn't cure very much. What you want is someone who's a good counsellor, a sort of trained psychologist, and they just happen to have hypnosis as one of their tools.
An extra tool in their belt.
Yes, and research definitely shows that when you add hypnosis to a whole range of techniques, you seem to get better effects.
It's one thing to tell the conscious mind, but if you can explain it to the subconscious mind.
That seems to be how it works, yes. Whether that is what's going on, really, because psychologists, Freud spoke about the subconscious, of course, and Freud is not held in desperately high regard by lots of psychologists today. Some still think a lot of him. So a lot of us feel slightly uneasy talking about the subconscious, but as a good sort of quick label, what you just said seems to describe things rather well, that somehow you're getting the message through to the subconscious and making things happen.
How do you feel about the kind of influx of TV hypnosis, NLP, and all these kind of programs that are happening right now, popularising it, I guess.
Popularising? Well, I've nothing against popularising per se. One of the things I like about hypnosis is it obviously intrigues me. I find it fascinating. But it tends to fascinate the general public as well. Everyone's a little bit scared, perhaps, you know, what would it do to me? And certainly interested to see what it does to others. So I often get asked to talk about it, and it's a wonderful vehicle for teaching science, how the brain functions and so on, all the various theories. It's good stuff. So, I'm happy for people to be interested, and I'm always happy to explain my work. I think if a university researcher who's obviously publicly funded, in effect, the taxpayer supports us, I think we have a duty to try to explain to the public what it is we're doing in non-sensational scientific terms. It's good.
Do you have a website for your own kind of studies and interests?
Personally, I just have my ordinary university website, but there are websites out there. I would recommend, for example, the British Society of Clinical and Academic Hypnosis. That's a good society.
And should somebody be thinking of hypnosis right now, what kind of letters after the practitioner's name should they be looking for?
I would recommend they go to the BSCAH website, and they'll get a referral list there and find people in their area. And if they're a member of that society, they're certainly not likely to get given any false memories. Those people know what they're about pretty well.
Thank you so much. I could talk about this forever. It's fascinating. Thank you.
It's fun, isn't it? My pleasure.